Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, Moors, to Moors Talk Live 100. I'm your host, Tahaka Amana L. Bate, and this will be our first two-hour broadcast. Today's guest will be Reverend Hotep out of Tampa, Florida, and he will be discussing African influence on Scripture, and that'll be at the our first hour. And within the second hour, we'll be dealing with Brother Diallo Sakur L. He will be discussing black-owned businesses and blacks in business. Let us get started. First of all, I want you to have some access to me. You're listening to Moors Talk Live 100. in order to contact me, the call-in number is 310 area code and 982-4184. And if you have any comments and questions for our guests, that is the number that you would dial. Area code 310-982-4184. And of course, you know you can reach me at tahaka99@yahoo.com, tahaka99@yahoo.com. You can hit me up after 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at area code 904-303-9061. We're still offering our free articles to anybody that is trying to, if you're trying to get your nationality straightened out and all that stuff, it's very, very important that you receive these two free articles. They are, number one is the 14th Amendment Exposed, and the second article is the Commerce Game, and how to play. And you only simply need to send me an email request for those articles at tahaka99@yahoo.com. And for those of you who has Facebook account or Twitter accounts, Black Planet, MySpace, send me your friend request. And I would honor that so that you can have access to my wall on Facebook, and you can get your education, get a black education there by simply studying the videos that are posted there for you and for your education. I see I have someone on the caller line at this moment, and I'm going to go ahead and open that up before our guest comes on, and we'll make sure that we find out who this is. Area code 347, tell us who you are and where you're calling from. You're on the air. Area code 347.
Hello?
Hello? Tell us your name
this
and where you're calling from.
Peace,
okay.
How you doing?
Hey, I'm just fine, my brother. I'm glad you tuned in to the broadcast. And have you sent us your Facebook request as of yet for, so that I can honor that for you on Facebook and have you received our free articles on the 14th Amendment and Commerce Game exposed yet?
Oh, no. I haven't. I don't even have a Facebook account, you know. I say I wouldn't open one until, you know, I'm doing commerce or something like that. But
okay.
I had hit you up on a Blogspot though.
Okay, all right, that's cool. We'll honor that. And I was just tuning in, but let me go ahead and continue. Appreciate you tuning in to the broadcast. So if you just keep on listening, we'll go ahead and deliver the information that we have to give. All right,
No problem.
All right.
I sure will be listening. I listen all the time. Peace,
brother. Okay, now let us move forward. In last week's broadcast, we dealt with the Moors and the Masons and the relationship between Masons and Moors, which a whole lot of people don't know about that particular relationship. And we also came to you with articles with excerpts from Stanley Lane Poole's book, The Moors in Spain. And I want to give you a little bit of that, see if we can try to wrap that up. There's a great deal of information on that to be put out. And we're still waiting on our guest to call into the show, which he should be calling in shortly. I'm going to pick up here in Stanley Lane Poole's book before we go over to the Moors in Spain. And it says here in the chapters that one of the biggest mistakes that Africans made in dealing with Europeans and the African Moors, they introduced, it says here in the introduction that the Moors induced the manufacture of gunpowder into Europe, and their enemies adopted this explosive and used it to drive the Moors back into Africa after several centuries of Portuguese and culture of Islam finally retrogrades into a decayed condition. The Saracens failed to recover from the conquest of the Seljuk Turks in the 11th century and the Mongols in the 13th. Okay, like I stated, the Moors are the one, the African Moors are the ones who had introduced gunpowder in the making of weapons, these type of weapons and explosives in there. And in my opinion, I think that was a terrible mistake, that we, something that we should never have given to someone with that type of nature. And it's all recorded. We got to take the bitter with the sweet, and what's done is done. And also, I want to deal with the fact that it's stated here once again, the part about who introduced what and who brought the lighters of civilization to the world. The Europeans have taken credit for bringing us into the industrial age and being the first smelters of iron. Well, that lasted for a while until one had went up into the Great Pyramid and found a wedge of iron wedged between a rock dating back over 5,000 years. So that dispelled that myth. Also, we know that people inside the United States are classified as black people are responsible for the in excess of 60 or 70% of the inventions that we enjoy today, and but have never received the proper credit for these inventions, never having able to get a patent for their inventions, and of course, inventions were stolen. And someone else is taking credit for it. The same thing took place during the expedition where the Europeans, along with Matthew Henson, climbed the top of the world to be the first one to set foot on the top of the world. And the European had he passed out up there, and the brother had to pick him up and continue on to the summit. And he stood with this European on top of the world. As first person, but of course, being that the expedition was in the European guy's name, he was to take credit for being the first man to stand on top of the world, which is a lie. And of course, every man that has ever attempted to do that since then, there has been no one that has actually succeeded at that since Mr. Henson. Also, I want to go on to the next thing in Brother Stanley Lane Poole's work here in regards to the Moors in Spain. And we're going to go over here. And it says here in the Berbers with on the chapter, chapter 10 in the Berbers with Power, it says a state is best governed by the mass of its people. If you keep a people in leading strings, it is said, and the moment the strings break, are all worn out, the people will not know where to go. The theory, however, is only a general statement of an obvious truth, and its application depends greatly upon the character of the people. Some nations seem always to need leading strings, and none has yet become absolutely independent of the guidance of the dominant mind, nor would such independence be desirable unless a dead level of mediocrity be our ideal of a state. Now, we know that inside the United States, black people make up a large percentage of the populace inside this country. However, they don't seem to be able to exercise any type of power. And the reason why that is because they have failed to realize that them as a nation, as us as a nation, is just like a tree, a plant. And when you pull that plant up by its roots, and you separate the stem of that plant from its roots, that plant cannot grow. And even though you replant it, if it's separated from its root, and then you can water it, you can fertilize it, it will never grow. And eventually it will die because it has been separated from its historical root. And the same thing applies to people who have been classified as Negro, colors, and black inside the United States of America. We have been cut off from our culture, and we seem to refuse to go back to reconnect to that culture. And as a result of that, we remain powerless and we have no voice. You, everybody from every country around the world that is connected to its culture and its roots seem to be doing quite well. That connection is vital to the growth of a people. And we have to understand that as long as we remain separated from our historical roots and culture, that we will never be able to flourish as a people and have a voice upon this land, any form of leadership collectively. You have to reconnect to a root. You have to do that. It is vital. We notice this when we go inside various restaurants that are owned by people that come into this country, the Chinese, the Mexicans, the Japanese restaurants, and so on and so forth, Mediterranean restaurants and Italian restaurants, that these people serve their cultural food. Now, you would think that if you move the Chinese restaurants into a all-black community, that you would try to sell what the people like. You would do your research and find out what they are accustomed to eating, and that's what you would put on your menu and sell. But it is not so with these people. They are connected to their root and their culture, and this is what they present to you in your community, even though you are accustomed to eating something else. They don't care, because to them, their culture is more important than what you are accustomed to eating. And if you don't want to eat their cultural meals, then so be it. They're still in your community. They're still open for business. And we, of course, flock to their restaurants and stuff, and we are patronizing them. And the monies that we are using, our hard-earned money, to give these people, they are taking this money and moving it out of the community on a daily basis. And we're wondering why our streets and roads and stuff is in a state of a decay, and why it's always ghetto-ish, so to speak, in a lot of our communities, is because we constantly send money out of our community. And the reason why, we are disconnected from our culture and our historical roots. And as long as we remain that way, there is no way that we can turn this thing around. And all people who are in this country that came from someplace else that have these restaurants in our community, they're all doing the same thing. And if you look around, there are new ones cropping up. I just went up the other day up on the main street here in my city, and I noticed that there were three brand new restaurants, people of Arab descent that have opened it, and the stuff that they're serving is to me has absolutely no nutritional value, but yet we are flocking in there and we're spending our money there, and of course they are taking the money out of our community, and after the community falls down, then they simply move on to another community and do the same thing. And so we have to wake up and start changing our ways and the things that we're doing. And one other thing that I want to touch on this evening is our investment in the celebration of someone else's holiday. We have New Year's, we have Thanksgiving, we have Christmas, we have Halloween, we have Valentine's Day, we have Mother's Day, we have Father's Day, and we seem never to have any desire whatsoever to go back and do any type of research on the origin of these particular holidays. Never. We never do that. And I find that quite amazing because we are spending our hard-earned money during that type of season. And one of the most phenomenal things that I seen here in my own city is a couple of years ago, I went into a grocery store and right here in this city, in Jacksonville, Florida, and I noticed that the store was packed. The store is owned by a white guy, but it was packed a day or so before Thanksgiving. And I noticed that out of all the people in the store, all of these people had baskets full. There was one guy who had two baskets full of turkeys. And I had to ask this brother, what are you going to do with all of those turkeys? He said, well, this is a part, this is for our church, and for Thanksgiving for our church. I said, okay. But I noticed that was one white man out of all of those people in that store, and he had a little girl with him and a little boy. But I noticed that he only had a few items in his basket, and he had absolutely nothing pertaining to Thanksgiving. And so I had to talk to him. I said, Mister, you getting ready for Thanksgiving? He said, no, we're not going to participate in that this year. We're not going to do that. I said, okay. So now I'm saying to myself, okay, this guy is of European descent, but yet he's telling me that he's making absolutely no preparation to celebrate a holiday that belongs to him, that was created by his ancestors for him. You follow me? But yet we have black people, the people who are being called black, Negroes and colored, filling their basket up with turkeys. They have hams. I've seen ham hocks, chitlin, bags of potatoes, turkeys. And one of the most interesting things I see, and we only do it once a year, is they had cranberry. Now, I don't know very many black people that eat cranberry during the other times of the year. The only time I see that is during this particular time period and during this season of this particular holiday, which have absolutely nothing to do with the people who are called black people. And to me, this is a phenomenon to see our people out Christmas, the people who the holiday was designed by and created for. This is a phenomenon to me. And then we have, after that, the next season we have is Christmas. And once again, we're working. We can't wait to get off from work because we have to go and buy the Christmas tree and the lights and decorate the lights all around our house. And when you ask the average person that's called black, Negro, or colored to tell you the historical origin of the holiday, you can hardly get an answer, and you certainly don't get a historical answer to the question. And they give you a series of excuses for celebrating a holiday that has absolutely nothing to do with them. Now, it wouldn't be so bad if they were not spending their hard-earned money with the stores that they don't own that are in their community, and the money is being taken out of their community and servicing and beautifying and embellishing someone else's community. So I asked another question, because there are certain communities that you can ride through during this time of season, and you will notice that the entire community is lit up with all of these multiple colored lights, and they have the reindeer on top of their house and attached to a white man in a red suit sitting in a bucket on top of their roof. And so I ask my brothers and sisters, can you tell me about whether or not there are reindeers in Africa? I don't get a response. So my next question is, in your opinion, who do you think have the best Christmas in your city out of all the people in the whole city? Who is it that you think have the best Christmas or enjoy Christmas the most. And they think for a minute and they say, well, the obvious answer to that question is easy. It has to be the children. I say, you are absolutely incorrect. I say, it's not. I say, it is the electric company that run your city. That's who has the best Christmas. Now, then the next holiday we come to, we get on down into Easter, and we have Mother's Day and Father's Day, and I try to understand how is it that someone else can determine for me when I'm supposed to set aside a day or participate in a day that they have given me to acknowledge or recognize my mother, the one that birthed me into the world. I mean, who did that? I mean, I have examined and searched and searched and searched in my studies and books and culture, and I have yet to find anyone who can give me an answer to that question. I have yet to find that. I haven't found it yet. So I wonder why do we continue to participate and invest our money. I watch the brothers during this time of season. They're out, they're spending their money, they're buying baskets, and they're buying flowers, and they're doing all this stuff on that particular day. So I'm saying to myself, well, what about the rest of the year? When are we going to set aside, even if we do it on an individual basis, a day from our own culture and pronounce to our own people that that is a day that we're going to recognize? When are we going to do that? I have yet to see anybody else do that. Now, I'm going to pause here for a moment. I have a caller on the line, and I'm going to let him in. Area code 786. Tell me your name and where you're calling from and what comments you have. Area code 786. You're on the air.
Hello?
Hello, brother.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you, but you got a lot of background noise there.
Okay, I'm outside. I'm going to bring the microphone a little closer. I don't know whether you're able to hear me or not.
Okay,
this is Malik down in Dade County, Florida country. And just listening to you, I know it's in the book of Revelation, I'm saying Jeremiah, King James Version, even though we didn't write that part, they put a lot of parts in and took a lot of parts out. But they're letting us know that this is not our culture, because our own people was letting us know as well, like the Africans that wrote that Bible and wrote the scriptures, letting us know how the prophet would go down in the forest and pick out a tree and chop it down and drag it into the house and drape it with all this kind of stuff, as well as Thanksgiving, which has had absolutely nothing to do with our culture, with the turkeys and the cranberry sauce and other kind of stuff like that. But you're absolutely right, and that's a good point that you're making. I just wanted to point that out, brother.
Okay, well, brother, I appreciate you calling in, and we thank you for your comments. I have another brother on the line. I'm going to go ahead and let him in, but thanks for calling.
Oh, okay, peace.
Peace. Okay, area code 9, area code 513, you're on the air. Okay, so this brother here, he's tuned out as well. Now, let me continue with what I was saying. What is very, very interesting in regards to your holidays, I noticed that when Father's Day come around, there's not a whole lot of hoopla. Fathers there's a total difference between Father's Day and Mother's Day when those time periods come around. And so I just wanted to point out some of the things that we are participating in and spending our hard-earned income for, and this income is being taken out of the black community to aid someone else and embellish someone else. Now, excuse me a moment. What I'm trying to do here is expose something and to make my people aware of the fact that there's something that they're doing that they need to stop doing. Because if you continue to do the things that you're doing, we're never going to grow as a people. And then we have the Easter celebration. And to me, that is one of the most interesting and baffling celebrations that I've ever seen. And it has always been an enigma to me, even as a child, because I come from an area where there were gardens and there were animals and stuff of this nature. And I have never seen a bunny rabbit lay an egg. And I'm trying to find out why my people go into a grocery store and buy chicken eggs, take them home, put coloring on them, and sometimes I see them take these same eggs and stick them in a basket of artificial grass with a rabbit in it. That is one of the most baffling things that we do. And I ask people sometimes, and this is the way I put the question to them. I say, in your opinion, now this is your opinion that I'm asking, in your opinion, approximately how many Easter eggs does a bunny rabbit lay during Easter time? Some people say, well, the average bunny rabbit. I say, yeah, the average bunny rabbit. Probably about 500. Some people say 1,000. Some people say probably about 200. I say, well, what about the fact that rabbits don't lay no eggs? And they think for a minute, and they think, and they say, well, wow. So now that goes to show me that here we are as a people buying and participating and celebrating something that not only do we not have any historical or our historical information on the holiday, but we don't even pay attention to the entrapments or the trimmings surrounding the holiday. But yet we are spending our hard-earned money, and that money is going out of our community, and we're celebrating something that belongs to someone else. Now, there is another holiday. This holiday is called New Year's. And this New Year's holiday is set to go off on January the 1st in the dead of winter, when all the leaves on the trees is falling off, dying out. Every animal, all the animals on the planet, done went underground. Snakes underground. The ants is underground. Everybody is burrowing in for the winter. But it is being held and is put into effect as being New Year. So when New Year's come, and what has gotten very, very interesting, you know, our people, we grab a hold of stuff, and we outdo the people that's created it. And when it comes to the Pope, we out-pope the Pope. We outdo everything about something that belongs to somebody else. Now, when 12 midnight comes, it is declared that it's New Year's. My question is, according to who? And what we have a bad habit of doing, we feel like it's time for fireworks, so therefore, what we do now, we've created a whole new custom where we go and take our weapons that we have in our home to protect our homes and family and property, and we begin to discharge these weapons in the air, just firing and listening to see who else is firing so that we can determine what type of weapon they use. And then we'll go out next year and we'll buy new weapons so that we can make a lot of bang than the guy around the corner did last year. You see me? Do you understand what I'm telling you? And we do this every single year. Now, it has gotten a little bit worse now, because what we are doing now is, it was a time when this we would do that, and it would maybe last for 30 minutes and max out at probably about 40 minutes to an hour. But now we're shooting because we've gotten a whole new, extra ammunition. We'll start shooting at 12 midnight, and we'll keep on shooting to 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. And after it's all over with, we don't have no more ammunition. Our children, we can't protect them if we need a weapon. We don't put all the ammunition into somebody else's holiday, and which is proclaimed as New Year's. Now, common sense tell me, if our Creator is the creator of the living, it would be natural and normal if a new year began in spring, when the flowers are blooming and blossoming and the new hatchlings come out from underground and present themselves as new creatures and bring out all the new babies and stuff. That seems to me to be the beginning of a new beginning, new life. But we have allowed somebody else to tell us that New Year's begin in winter. It's a new year, and it's going to start off dead. But yet we have a creator who's the creator of the living. That doesn't make any sense to me. Okay, now let's move on to the next one. Let's take Halloween, which has absolutely, once again, nothing to do with people who are classified as Negro, Blacks, and Coloreds. Now, before I get into that one, I want to stop right now, and for those of you who are just tuning in, you're listening to Morris Talk Live 100. I'm your host, Tahaka Amana L. Bay. This is our first two-hour broadcast. I've been waiting on the my guest who told me that he would be here, but he's not here. He hasn't shown up. So we got the show must go on, so we are going to proceed. And for those of you who are trying to deal with your nationality, you're trying to break away from enslavement, you need to know how to deal with your bill collectors and how to get them off your back, and taxation and all of this stuff here, and dealing with traffic stops and police and jail and all that, I'd like for you to send me an email at tahaka99@yahoo.com. That's T-A-R-H-A-K-A 99. So at yahoo.com, so that I can send you my free articles, The 14th Amendment Exposed and The Commerce Game and How to Play, so you will know what's going on. You see, when you have information available to you, you will know how to deal with certain things. So I would like for you to send me an email. Just say, Tahaka, I'd like to get your free articles. And either you can call me in regards to your archive. Now, we have created one of the most comprehensive archives of the 20th century that has a great deal of information, including the background information on the these holidays and stuff, and the historical references, and where they was created, and how it was created, and who did it, and when, where, and why, and all of that. So you will have this knowledge, so you can contribute to the uplifting of your people instead of the degradation, tearing down of your community, and sending money out of your community. You can access those archives by contacting me after 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at area code 904-303-9061, and we'll discuss that with you so we can get it to you. With that said, let me move forward and deal with this Halloween tradition, which has absolutely nothing to do with people who are called Negro, Blacks, and Coloreds, anyone of African descent. Now, we notice that during this time of season, our parents will get out in the streets after dark, and their children is dressed up in costumes and stuff of a scary, negative nature, and go from house to house yelling trick-or-treat, and people come in, and they allow them to the door, and they'll come on, and they'll fill a little basket with candy and fruit and nuts and stuff or what have you. I learned a long time ago, because I'm involved in health and nutrition, that once you eat a piece of candy, the stuff from that candy remain in the walls of the intestinal tract for years and years to come. And it has absolutely no nutritional value. And, of course, the celebration itself has absolutely nothing to do with us. And we, once again, haven't taken the time to even investigate where it come from. We just participate in it, and the people who are giving away the candy are actually buying the candy from someone else, and, of course, the money is going out of the community. And then the recipients of the candy, the children, are actually eating this stuff, which is harmful. It has no nutritional value. There is no value to it whatsoever, but yet, we participate in the same ritual practices year after year after year. And people like myself and other brothers like Emusu Barashenga that have got on YouTube and written books and put this information out there for us, we still have not heard him in all over the United States, and we still don't listen to it. We keep doing the same thing over and over and over, and then we wonder when things going to change for black people in America. Well, I'm here to tell you that it's not going to change. If you keep doing the same wrong thing over and over and over, again looking for something, a different result, you won't get a different result. You are committing an act of insanity. And that is the definition of insanity, to continue to do the same wrong thing over and over again, looking for a different result. And you cannot figure out why so-called black people are in the condition that they're in today. And it is a phenomenon for these people to be in the system compared to the life that they lived long ago. Build the greatest civilization the world has ever seen. There is nothing that has equaled the Egyptian civilization, or the people that we're calling Egyptian, which no such people, we are referring to the ancient Kemetics. However, the rest of the world has never seen us in this condition. After 400 years being in this country, we are still at the bottom of the totem pole. We are still, the chains have been removed from our feet and hands, and now the chains are on our brains. We're sending our children to school to let somebody else put their interpretation of culture and history in their minds. We are leaving it up to them. And if you ask the average student to tell you who George Washington is, or Abraham Lincoln, or Christopher Columbus, they recite that very easily. However, if you ask them to tell you about a person called Akhenaten, Nefertiti, and people of these nature. They have absolutely no idea, because inside the public school system and private school system, this is not allowed. Now, if it is not allowed for you to learn anything in your culture, and we know that if you're not participating in learning anything about your culture, and you are celebrating someone else's holidays, which makes you a participant in somebody else's culture, you are committing what is known as national mental genocide. That is what's going on. The first thing that every child needs to be taught before they go to school, before they go to school, is who they are and everything about their culture and their story. That is the first thing that they should be taught. And if they are not taught these things, then we have a problem. So by the time they get to school, the second thing that needs to take place is if a child of African descent walks through the door in that school, then the teacher should be prepared to teach them about their culture. If they're in the classroom with white children, then the teacher is supposed to tell them about what's attached to them and truthfully their culture. Everybody is supposed to know who they are, you see. But wherever you go inside the United States and wherever you go in the school system, you have everything is dealt with from a Eurocentric position. Or you'll see people of color, but the main force of the curriculum is not from a Afrocentric position. So therefore, the child doesn't know anything about their cultural story. It's not being promoted in the public school system. So therefore, what we have to do as the parents and custodians of these children, we have to make sure that our story and their culture is instilled in them so that they will be able to dispel the lie. You follow me? So there's a lot of work that needs to be done in the black community, and what's going to have to take place is people who are called Negro, blacks, and colors are going to have to take responsibility and start changing some things in our community. We're going to start changing something. Now, we get to the next holiday, and this is a doozy. This is the holiday of Valentine's Day. And I would like for you all to do me a favor. And when this holiday comes around and you see people, the brothers out running and buying candy and flowers and all this stuff, just stop the brother and say, "Brother, look, I got a question I need to ask you. Can you please tell me what Valentine's Day have to do with black people? Just give me a brief synopsis of the African background of the story and when it started in Africa. Could you please give me that information?" And you discover that you don't get an answer. And he definitely doesn't want to talk to you because he's running late. He in a hurry. He got to be somewhere. But yet, every year we invest our money in it. The money goes out to community, and we give these gifts during these holiday seasons, and these seasons have absolutely nothing to do with us, and someone else is profiting from the packaging, the sale of the goods, the manufacturing of the goods, and the advertisement of the goods, and the only thing that we are consumers of the goods. And you cannot get anywhere by saving or spending. You have to invest. But we don't do that. And we have not learned how to invest in something that we can put in back into our community. We don't invest in the community. We leave it up to the city to take care of our community. Now, we'll leave it up the city to cut the field in the lot across the vacant lot across the street from our house. We won't take responsibility to go over there and cut it ourselves and to enhance our own community. We leave that up to somebody else. We remain in a dependent national mode. And we think that when we go to school and get an education and get a college degree, that makes us somebody. We consider ourselves to be educated and to have a great deal of integrity and prestige and all of this stuff. And I run into a lot of these brothers and sisters, and I'm quick to ask them. I say, "You have your college degree?" "Oh yes, I have a bachelor's degree. I have an associate's degree. I'm working on my master's." I say, "Well, can you please answer a question for me?" "Of course. What is it?" I say, "Can you please tell me who you are without telling me your name?" And there's a long pause of silence, because they have been given a lot of information and it's been called education. But when I ask them to tell me what the college professors taught them about the ancient Kemetans, about ancient Kush and the ancient people of the Sudan and the ancient people of Ethiopia, or what we know as Ethiopia, there is no answer. And usually at this point, I would like to have a mirror so I can hold it up and tell them to look in it and ask them, "Don't you think something is wrong? You know everything about everything, and you got a degree, but you don't even know who you are, and you call yourself intelligent?" That is amazing to me. Well, anyway, let's move on to the next holidays. I wonder if I've covered them all, or if there's any more left. We dealt with Mother's Day. We dealt with Father's Day. We dealt with Christmas. We dealt with Easter. We dealt with New Year's. We dealt with Thanksgiving. And let's see what else is out there. I think we pretty much covered them all. We dealt with Halloween and all of this stuff. And, of course, then we have the minor days. We have Veterans Day. We have President's Day. We have Lincoln's birthday. I think we have, Washington's birthday and all of this. But once again, I need to know, what does it have to do culturally with the people who are called Negro, blacks, and colors? What? What does it have to do with them? Because for the life of me, I can't figure it out. And ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to stop at this moment and give out this information once again. For those of you who are trying to take advantage of your nationality, and you want to learn everything you can about your culture and your story, we have created a library for you. It is the most comprehensive libraries inside the United States, and we've made it available to you. This is for people who are classified or called Negro, blacks, and colors. And you access that by contacting me, Tahaka Amana L. Bay, at area code 904-303-9061, and we'll see if we can get that to you. And also, we are offering two free articles this evening. The first article is the 14th Amendment Exposed, and the second article is the Commerce Game and How to Play. And you simply email me at tahaka99@yahoo.com. That's T-A-R-A-H-A-K-A 99@yahoo.com. And we're also encouraging you to send me your Facebook request and your Twitter and MySpace and Black Planet and these requests, friendship. And that way you can go to my Facebook wall and you can access the videos on Facebook, and they are put there for your educational purposes, so that you will be able to get some insight into what's going on and what's involving you as a person who's called black. But see, because your culture is not being promoted anywhere inside the school system. It's not being promoted from an Afrocentric position inside your colleges and universities. We need certain books made available to you that's not being offered in any college and university inside the United States. It's not being offered. But these books are listed in Tahaka's archives, and you can purchase these books, and you can have access to something that has something to do with you. So along with your master's degree and your bachelor's degree and your associate's degree, you can tell somebody, not only do I have a degree, but I also have knowledge of self. I know who I am. I know about my culture and my story. I have that information, so therefore I truly have an education. I am a person with knowledge. I have an education. I know who I am. And I also just happen to have a degree. Because what we want to have is we want to have knowledge of ourselves, our culture, and our story. But we also want to have his story as well. And so therefore I always tell people to contact me, send me your request so that we can your friend request so that we can get that information to give you that access and grant your friendship, and so that you will be able on a daily basis at your leisure to study everything there is that you'll need to know about our ancient story. It is very, very important for us to understand ancient black history, black our story, as well as his story. It is more important for us to understand both positions. That way, we're able to separate fact from fiction. Most of us cannot afford on a regular basis to go to the continent of Africa and get it from the horse's mouth. We know very little about the ancient people of this landmass. The only thing that we have to go on is what the media broadcast to us, what Europeans are allowed to be taught in school. But then we're not paying attention to the fact that every so often there's some ancient artifacts found dating back thousands of years of people of African descent found on this continent. And then it is immediately whisked out the country, put into the Smithsonian Institute, and immediately taken out of the media. But it hasn't dawned on us that something is wrong. We keep swallowing the same information and regurgitating the same information, and it is not benefiting at, us at all. We think that if we make $30,000 or $40,000 or $50,000 a year, that we're really moving on when the rest of our nation is in shambles. We think that we're making progress. But we're not making progress because, first of all, there is no money in the United States of America. What we have is fiat currency. The United States of America is not a country. It is a corporation, and it is currently operating in a bankruptcy. The House Joint Resolution 192 has already been put into effect as a remedy for you because there is no gold backing up the paper that you have. So, therefore, the money that you thought you have is worthless. So what it behooves us to do now is to try to get into a position of survival. Excuse me. We have not paid attention to what happened during the stock market crash. We need to go back and read the story because there were people who had thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars tied into the stock market. Oh, man, they were living lavish house styles, lifestyles, and had big fabulous homes and driving big expensive cars and just living as if there was no tomorrow, until the market crashed and they became poverty-stricken overnight. a lot of these people committed suicide. They had, a lot of these people had absolutely no skill. They could not, they had no food growing skills. They couldn't grow any food. They were just out. A lot of them had never worked before. They're really in a pickle. So we are constantly dependent on a system, and we are living as if we would never be called upon to take responsibility for our own self. And we won't take the time to invest in getting knowledge of self, trying to understand our own culture. And so that is why I have created what's called Tahaka's Archives, so that you will be able to have something right there in a nutshell, because I know that most people that are called black are doing everything that they can to make a living. And they don't have a whole lot of time, but if you had access to that in the comfort of your home, and you and your children can begin to study our culture right there in one particular spot without a whole lot of muss and fuss. You just simply go to that one spot and click on the different articles and look at the different videos and stuff and get your education that's connected to you and your culture and your story right there. And so, once again, and the way you access those archives is by contacting me, Tahaka Amana Elbe, at our area code 904-303-9061. And we're going to continue. The next thing that I want to discuss is the fact that prior to the turn of the century, most people who are called black people, most people in America were self-employed. And immediately after the turn of the century, we have 95% of people that are called Americans today that are working for somebody else. And so therefore, being employed in your own business is not being promoted by the media en masse. There's not a whole lot being said by the politicians about putting people in position to become self-employed. There's always, we got to create more jobs. Well, what about putting us in a position so that we can be independent? So that we can own our own businesses, so that we can provide our own services and revenues for our own self and put us in a position that we can control. But no, that is not being perpetuated and not being broadcast to you. Instead, what is being broadcast to you is you need to have a job. You need to work for somebody else, you see. And so I'm going to, I've got another caller just tune in. I'm going to open up the line and see what this brother had to say. Area code 786, you are on the air with Tahaka. Please state your name and tell us where you're calling from. Hello? Area code 786. Okay, that's going on. Now, once again, as I was saying about the brothers who are self not employed. Ladies and gentlemen, the clock on the wall, so we go ahead on and open up for our guest speaker, brother Diallo Sakura L. And let me go on in and get him on in here. Area code 706, brother L. Are you there?
I'm here. Peace, brother.
Peace, my brother. I'm going to go ahead and give you the floor, and you can tell us about blacks and owning their own business. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Brother Diallo Sekou L., and the topic he's going to discuss with you is blacks and their own business and the importance of that. Go ahead, my brother. We are listening.
Okay. I mean, I don't have a big spiel, brother. I just, it's real simple. you know, Noble Drew Ali set up a format for Moors in North America, and Noble, I think maybe the Honorable Elijah Muhammad probably set it up the best after Noble Drew Ali set up the do-for-self type of businesses. And if we look at the Jim Crow era, when the majority of businesses were owned by us and we supported us, and Dr. Jawanza Kanjufu, he documented it probably the best, and how the in his book called Black Economics, and how our money is rotated during the Jim Crow era at least 85 times, as to now it may be one time, meaning, you know, before you even probably cash or get that direct deposit, your money's already accounted for and gone. And I mentioned the Jim Crow era because, as Dr. Jawanza Kanjufu mentioned in his book, when you had the so-called black athlete, excuse me, you know, I don't use black, but I'm going to just say black for the show, or the Moors athlete would convert it over to the Major League Baseball during then, when there were about, I think, either 12 or 13 Negro League Moorish-owned teams. And they owned the stadiums, and inside those stadiums they had vendors that were all Moorish. But when the, when somebody like a, let's say, Jackie Robinson, for example, went over to the European League, then everybody else went over to the European League. So what happened? What happened is no one owned the Negro League anymore. No one owned the stadiums anymore. The vendors had no businesses like they had inside those stadiums anymore. So then we see those businesses close down, but then the other side of that is that the economics or the finance that they had coming in wasn't the same. So they had to leave the area which they were in and go to a lower economic area, which, of course, you know, back then the school system sucked. And then we're dealing with it, and then the secondary form of education. So it was a trickle-down effect when we looked to try to spend our money or even to support something that wasn't ours, because remember, our school teachers lived in our neighborhoods. We knew the principals at some point in time. Now the school system, of course, being state-owned by the government, we don't know our teachers. Our teachers all shipped in. As a matter of fact, that all schools that are more predominantly enrolled, the teachers are 85% European females.
Okay.
And that's also documented in Dr. Jawanza. I mean, he documented well, as well as Dr. Amos Wilson. He mentioned a lot of good information as well. But the economics in a state of North America is very important, and you have to have the education behind it as well to survive, or either get past surviving, just doing well, where you can create other venues. The more money you have, the more opportunities we can create for each other. And it's, you know, it's real simple. Like right now, a lot of people are moving, creating their businesses into trust instead of the standard LLC or corporation, or a lot of people doing LLCs. It just depends on your education and how you want to move forward with that type of thing.
Okay.
So, you know, my company is, one is the Comedic Empire. It's a trust. We have Private Side Media, which I incorporated, but it's also a trust in Florida. It's incorporated in Georgia, but it's also a trust in Florida.
Okay.
And I created Private Side Media because of my children. Looking at them and knowing there weren't any images as far as cartoons. I like cartoons. I mean, you know, when it comes time to me watching TV, I like certain programs, and I like certain programs for my children to watch. So, you know, I would literally have to go and get the Black Panther. Anything with a brother or sister in it, I had to go get, you know, for my children to watch.
Right.
And, you know, because the programming aspect, everything is, you know, the European man solving issues in 30 minutes on every station, prime time, every night. You rarely got a brother or sister that's in a predominantly role. And then if they're in a predominant role, they're not with their mate isn't the same as them. It's some other mission, but that's Hollywood. And so instead of complaining about it, you know, we create a Private Side Media where we can do our films, we can do our videos, and, you know, kind of like the same path that Spike Lee's done. A lot of directors have done. Tyler Perry, these guys create their own venues, man. They, you know, they're moguls. And so as far as the job aspect, man, as far as people having jobs, I'm going to be honest with you, I don't care what you got as long as you're taking care of your family. That's what it boils down. My affirmation with my children is all is one, family above everything. To me, that's all you need to know right now as far as my children. That's what they need to know. This is what they say every night before they go to bed. Everything is one, and it's family above everything. So when you look at a nation like Mexicans, their whole thing is to bring their money back to the house. When you're looking at the Mexicans, you know, five people in a, you know, one or two bedroom, and they each one of them making $8. People looking at, oh, he's only making $8 an hour. But what they're missing is you have, it's compounded money. It's five people making $8 an hour. So that's, what is that, $40 an hour being brought into the house.
Being brought into the house.
Into a two-bedroom house, you see? So I'm not saying that we have to move all up into one place or whatever. But what I'm saying is, you know, you do what you have to do, and, you know, to utilize jobs or whatever you need to do for other people as a means to an end. Because everybody's not a business owner, man. Okay, everybody can't own the business. Everybody can't be successful. And being
I do have to agree with that. You got some people that ain't got no business in business because they don't know what they're doing. I'm looking at the equation from a black mass national standpoint. I think that we can. There are other things that we can do along with the fact that we have employment instead of coming home on our off days and doing nothing and remaining in the same position complaining about our job. They're talents that we're all born with, and if we would use them to try to generate something that can be our own, that we can call our own, and I think that we'll fare much, much better with that. That was my point in putting that out, but you are absolutely correct. And go ahead and continue, brother. We're listening.
One other thing is I'm working on an investment group, and I think this is a key for people who want to, who may not have an idea of them of themselves, what to do as far as like open a business, but they, you know, they're like, well, I can't cook, I can't run a restaurant, but I can put finances into it because the business plan seems sound. The people that's a part of it seems sound. You understand? So if it's something like, you know, you create the investment group, and everyone has a certain control over the business ideas. You put up, I initially introduced it maybe like 3 years ago. You know, everybody put up maybe, 100 people put up $1,000.
Okay.
And that'll put you at $100,000. And then, you know, we'll move forward into figuring out, you know, the best four or five business plans to finance.
Okay. Well, let me stop right here. If someone wanted to take a look at that, how would they go about accessing some information on that? Do you have, like, a means by whereby they can check into that, some contact information, a website or something that maybe that the people can go through?
Well, yeah, well, first of all, with me, everything is private. I operate on the private side. So, you know, we basically just have a conversation, man. It's not going to be anything on the website. You know, we do face-to-face. If we have to communicate, you know, because we're out of time, we do the emails. But, you know, we can put documents in your hand, you know, overview on what we're doing.
Okay, and so they'll have to contact you by email.
Yeah, you can email me.
Okay, and you want to give the people your email address that might be listening in this evening?
Sure, it's DialoSekou1, which is DialoSekou1, and that's the number one, @gmail.com.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, you heard Brother Diallo. And, of course, this is for serious people who are seriously thinking about investing. And the brother will make, I guess, every attempt to make sure that you have all that you need and to walk you through this thing. And once again, he said that this is private, and you can gain access as a serious person by contacting him at the email address that he has provided for you. And I'm encouraging you to listen to this broadcast again so that you can get the information that you need if you missed it this time. You are listening to Morris Talk Live 100, and we are speaking to a brother that is a Morris National. He is Diallo Satu L, and he is located here in Jacksonville, Florida. He goes back and forth, and he does travel and do speaking engagements as well. Brother, you want to tell us about that?
Well, it's real simple, brother. I took time off because there was no information that I feel that the people needed when dealing with economics. And,
okay.
You know, we all have, me personally, let me just speak on me. I can't speak on nobody else. You know, people speak on ways to buy packages and, you know, first of all, ain't shit coming through, ain't no freedom coming through no paperwork, number one. Let's be clear on that. Number two, it's good to have your information for you to be able to apply for yourself. People's situations are different from city to city, state to state, second by second, hour by hour, things change. So what may have worked for me 30 minutes ago may not work for you in 10 minutes. It's up to the people to have you know, you got to be a self-starter, man. And when it comes to me to come speaking, you know, I have different forms of, like, I don't just speak on law, Moorish, not, you know, Moorish information. You know, I deal with origins of religion. We can do motivational things for our children. I have a platform of information to speak on. But,
okay.
You know, the book right now, I've just been going out, pushing out the book that I put out a while ago. I put something together called Understanding Jurisdiction and Status for Moors in North America.
Okay.
Based on a book I put out. And there's some other stuff I'm working on. I'm working on the Red Pill, which is basically, the Red Pill is an acronym for redefining essential duties.
Okay.
Which is what we have to do, which will go into applicable information step by step on what we need, what we like to call the freedom aspect. You know, we need to know how to set up the businesses. We need to know how to deal with courts. We need to know, I mean, all the stuff we need to know. So I took time off and now I'm back in it because I have what I wanted to put out. You know, people were just kind of, the information was just kind of stale and, you know, the same information over and over and over again, but nobody's telling the people how to empower themselves as far as businesses. If it is, they're trying to sell the fucking business to the people instead of, like, you know, this is the type of business that you can have. Just give it to them. The shit is free.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everybody's all, you know, I don't like that. Ain't nobody got no money out here, man. This shit is rough out there. That's why people got to get jobs, because they don't have a hustle mentality.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, sometimes jobs give people suffer. Like, for example, with my business, I hire people when I'm on video shoots or if I'm promoting an event. There's a staff. I can't tell. Everybody can't be a boss when it's the boss and they need a staff. You see
mm-hmm.
what I'm saying? So, some point in time, everybody works for somebody, you know. But as long as we know what our position is. And, you know,
right.
We are compromising ourselves for a little bit of chump change.
Okay. Now, how could someone purchase your book, the first book you mentioned? You want to give us the title of that book again and how the listening audience can go about purchasing that book from you?
Yeah, you can just download it or you can purchase the full book from lulu.com. And it's under my name, which is Asar Diallo Satu Abur L.
Okay.
You can. The book is called Understanding Jurisdiction and Status for Moors in North America.
Okay.
The book covers, what's called an introductory type of information. It has certain forms and affidavits that people can use as a template if they were filing a form of nationality. I also have just recently created a Yahoo group called Noble Research Group. So I myself, other people like you, Tahaka, can go on there and put information. You can answer questions. It's not for me. It's for people to just share so we don't have to keep asking the same questions over and over again. Like if you ask, well, how do I file this? Well, I'm going to put the answer in there. And then you could, you know, 16 other people can go in there and see that, you know, this is how you file this particular thing. Now, of course, sometimes people like in Chicago, they say that, let me see, where's Kwame at? Kwame's Detroit. That, you know, they stop certain files. And then, you know, we have to go in there and put in the alternative for filing certain paperwork if they won't allow it in the court of the clerk. So.
Okay. All right. Hey, that's fantastic. And that is the Yahoo group. And what did you say the name of that was again?
The Yahoo group is called Noble Research Group.
Okay. Noble Research Group. Okay.
Yes.
Hey, that's fantastic. Now,
there are forms.
Let me ask you something. What about people? Let's say I'm employed and I've been working for a company, and I've been there for like 10 or 15 years, but I want to start my own business, and I've been wanting to do that a long time. What would be the first step that I would take in order to do that, in your opinion? What do you think that a person that wants to do that, what would be the first thing that they want to do before they do anything else?
Well, I'm sorry, what was the form, what was the name of the business?
Okay, well, you know, let's say that I want to, let's say I want to open up my own, let's say I want to open up my own grocery store.
Okay. Well, like anything, nah, I know what you mean, Tucker. The first thing is you have to do research. You know, you have to do research, and you got to look at it realistically. Is this something that I can do? Is this something I can surround my some trustworthy people that can run the business?
Mm-hmm.
But everything starts with research. You have to do the math. You have to do the demographics. You have to make sure, you know, you got the right distribution of foods, the groceries that's coming in, and also create relationship with small vendors that can set up product inside the store. It's a lot of different things to do. We need our grocery stores, but we need a healthy, conscious form of person operating inside the venue. If they don't own it, at least they can operate it and understand that everybody's not a meat eater.
Right.
And everybody don't want to eat not MSG, but the, what are those seeds, patented seed food, you know, seedless fruits.
Monsanto seeds.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So you used the word demographics. You want to give us a little breakdown on that? That's a part of what we'll need to do. And I just want to make sure that our listeners clearly understand what we're talking about and when they're formulating their plans.
The demographics is based off of, you know, the age category, based off of the business. For example, Publix. If you're going to open up a grocery store, you want to find out what your competition is. And I'm not an expert on it, but all this information is online for free when wanting to start your business. You can simply Google it. And, you know, when you Google it, you look at different forms of information as a research. You don't just go with one. Oh, yeah, that's the one. You put them all together and see which ones that makes the most sense and have conversations with those people that have these businesses. You know, you got to have a conversation with the real deal instead of just reading the stuff on the internet. But you want to understand when your demographic is, who are you trying to, does this area that you're looking at, do they need this particular service? Could this work in this area? How much is it going to cost? Who's the competition? And, you know, then you got to have your money up front that's going to work, you know, that's going to weather you through the bad times as well.
Okay, so all of this, we're going to have to make preparations and get everything lined up, to count the cost of it, look at the community that it's in, look at other stores in the surrounding area and see how they are faring and all of this stuff in preparations for us even opening up, opposed to just getting enough money, finding out how much the building costs, and find out who can give us the best price on the groceries, and then just put them in there and put a sign up and say, we got a store.
Right.
I got what you're saying. Okay, that's very important. Is there anything else that you can shed some light on black people and, owning their own businesses or anything else in those lines that you want to discuss with us?
I mean, I think open it up for do we have anybody we can do question and answer?
Okay,
you know, well, I think people need to go and get that Dr. Jawaz Kanjufu book, man, Black Economics.
Okay, and Dr.
Jawaza Kanjufu. He also put out the book, Counter Conspiracy, Destroy Black Boys. He put out several books.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm going to open up the line here. I still got one brother on here. I'm going to open this up and see if he got any questions.
Okay.
And so I can get this thing open. It seems that he is not on. So we had a couple of callers. They've gotten off the line. A lot of people are listening, and they will come back later, because once the broadcast is posted, then you got people who tune in. A lot
right.
of them are working, what happens, and they will actually listen to the broadcast. That's why I keep stressing and putting the information up there, so that they will be able to contact you in regards to gain access to the information that you put out there and made available for them. But the main point now, we don't have any other callers on here that's trying to, there's no blinking lights at this point, to try
okay.
to ask questions. So that lets me know that they are listening to us as we carry on. So that's why I was asking if there's anything else that we need to discuss.
What's always good to have a network base of small entrepreneurs, of people who are not even entrepreneurs, but people who may know other people. We need to put these people in a pool. Or all of us need to be in a pool of information to be able to share,
right.
you know, the business aspect. And you know, that's why one reason we created Noble Research Group. So that's an aspect that you can just post something in there. You know, I'm in a couple of groups on Facebook, and I know people, I have conversations with people that need jobs. And I'm like, well, instead of just being on here, you know, kicking the bobo or whatever, post a job. Post something for people that need jobs or
right.
an opportunity to make money. You know what I mean?
Okay.
So, you know, in that aspect, we have to always think about the people. You know, our ancestors practiced they didn't practice worshiping outside of themselves. They practiced building up better human beings. And it was the people who didn't understand it and who wanted to create anthropomorphism type of societies, created religion in order to control and make political moves. We ain't about that, man. We about empowering people and making sure that we all on the same page. You know what I mean?
Okay.
If you're eating, I'm eating. If your children can read, mine can read. You know, your children, all my children. So, you know, this is how we have to think. Even though it's some assholes out there, we know that. But, we have to think, you know, beyond in a bigger spectrum than just a couple of assholes.
Right, right.
Especially when it comes to business.
Oh yeah, I have divided up my life into two segments. I want to deal with the educational segment of our people, and I want to deal with the health segment of my people. So we've created the archives, and I teach daily on the internet and provide them with valuable information that they need. And I also have opened up a gym, and I'm proud to say that a lot of brothers that have come and joined the gym, I took them personally and showed them how to juice organic fruits and vegetables and how to put the combination together. And so what each one has done all itself, all of them in the newest, my newest students, he's saying that he's going to go, but they are all going and purchasing their own juicing machines so they can carry this knowledge and teaching and health technique into their home. So I feel like I'm making progress, even though I'm only one man, I'm making progress in my area, in the community here in Jacksonville, Florida, in the health area, in the educational area. And so that is what I'm doing here personally. But as far as your group, I was unaware of your Yahoo group, but now that you've told me about that, I'm going there, the Yahoo research group, and look into that and see how I can be of some service in there and see if I can put some information down there and give them something that they can use in regards, because there's a lot of other talents that we all have. So I would like to get in there and see if I can be a contributor there as well. And I appreciate you calling and telling me about that. So let's go ahead and continue. We only have about 29 more minutes to go. And I wanted to ask you about the nationality in regards to business. How is that different from a person who is, we'll say, a 14th Amendment citizen versus a person who has proclaimed a nationality as an indigenous person and they are operating in business? How does that go? Can you tell us something about that?
Yeah, when you're, you mean someone who just claimed themselves as a Moor?
Yeah.
That's all you've done. You know, you just declared yourself not as the corporate entities other people see you. And so if you're owning a business, it doesn't affect you in a sense because you're controlling. No, we want to be in a position of not owning everything, but basically controlling everything.
Right.
That's why we mentioned about operating inside of trust. And, you know, the issue with the people that have declared their nationality and who work for people, that's fine. You know, it's not a big hoopla. You know, you have to. And then the other thing is just like dealing with different judges, you know, your employer may act different. I can't say, because there's no one pill that's going to say, okay, he's going to listen to me. But what I used to do when I worked with people was I would give them certain forms. I would give them and I put this form up in the Noble Research Group, which is the employee privacy right. Like, so this would stop any bill collectors, IRS, for trying to contact or take money from my account, and also gave them in lieu of a W-4 form, which said that I was exempt, which so I got all of my money on my check.
Okay.
So I think I put all those forms up in there. And, you know, you continue on, man, about your business. You can, you know, as long as you know who you are and you operate. And so how can stop calling people black, man, if you know they're Moors? Black is not a nationality, brother.
And I be trying hard. That's why I always try to remember to say people who are classified as Negro, because I'm trying to communicate with people out there who don't understand the difference of sometimes being using it so much I accidentally do it. But people who are classified are called Negro, blacks, and colored. There's no such thing as black person. There is no such thing as a Negro. And colored, African American, those are all brands. You either have a nationality or you don't. And so I'm sorry about that. I appreciate you. I do better next time, bro.
I think people, I don't push people to go get jobs. I don't push nobody to do anything. Mm-hmm. Because each person's situation is different. And, you know, when they're real and honest with themselves, they realize that they aren't bringing any money in, and they need to do something. They need to go and get their money and, you know, to put them in a better position.
That's right. So, I always encourage brothers the first thing they should do is to go ahead on and take control of the lifestyles that they are. If they have just got a job, they need to change their thinking patterns and start thinking about their future and start doing something constructively with the money. When I was employed for the baking company here in Jacksonville, I would sit out front on my break and I would listen to the new recruits. They come in, and those who were trying to get a job, and they were making statements like, man, I sure hope I get a job. And I said, okay, well, you know, just be patient, brother. And then those who had a job, I would ask them, okay, well, now you just got the job. What's the first thing you're going to invest in? Well, man, I'm going to get me some rims for my car. I'm going to get it painted and stuff of this nature. So I think maybe the brother has some priorities out. You can buy anything that you want. But to me, I guess I'm always looking at the bigger picture.
Right.
And I always think investments. If I'm on a fixed income by working for somebody else, and that's what I am, and I'm earning pecuniary wages, which are not taxable by law, and I didn't always know that, then it behooves me to take my money that I've exchanged energy for and use it to put myself in a little bit better position so that I can not only take responsibility for myself and my woman and children, but also be a contributor to my community and then go on to contribute to my nation and my people worldwide. So I think if we all would adopt that something along those lines, I think we'll fare a little bit better. It's all about arranging our priorities properly. And so that's all I wanted to add with that. You have anything else that you want to add?
Just kind of going with the flow, brother.
Okay.
Well, I think keep up what you're doing on this radio blog, this blog talk, man. We need it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I do that.
I started, but I couldn't. It's hard for me, man, to do something every day at the same time. It's because my schedule is crazy. You know, I get a lot of last-minute clients to come in, so I can't. It's hard for me to do it.
Okay. Well, I have managed now that I have a whole lot of free time. I don't work for anybody else. I earn my own income and create my own way to earn income. So I have a great deal of control over my lifestyle. I have a roof over my head and all of that stuff. So I'm able to use this as a medium to be as effective as I can and reach my people, trying to give them some type of mental nourishment so that they will be able to survive in this world, or give them something that they can use as a key. I've had our two brothers come in here today at the house. They're from St. Petersburg. And they arrived about 9:30, quarter to 10, and stayed here until shortly after 2 o'clock this evening. And we discussed a lot of things. And I think we made a whole lot of progress. We put a lot of the heavyweights on TV, on DVD, on culture and metaphysics and stuff. And the brothers took notes. And we discussed nutrition, got them some juice going on, and we really enjoyed the evening and had a good time and made a lot of progress. I see that I have a new caller that's joined us. I'm going to click on and see if you have any comments. Area code 347, you're on the air. Do you have any comments or statements that you'd like to make with our guest?
Oh, no, I'm just listening on. It's Brother Kyle from Brooklyn, New York, enjoying the show.
Okay, and your name again?
Cal, K-A-L, Cal Bay.
Okay, and what part of New York are you in, Cal?
Brooklyn.
Okay, all right. Well, me and my brother's going to continue on, and you continue to listen in, and I'm hoping that you'll be able to get something out of this broadcast.
Oh, always, always.
Okay, peace, brother.
Peace.
Okay, Diallo?
Yep.
Got another question.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let's say that, okay, we got our business going, and we've moved past the first year in business, and we didn't earn a profit in the first year of business, but we did break even. So going into the second year, and we start making a profit. In your opinion, what's the first thing that we should start considering after making a profit, after we have gotten established? What do you say that a person that is in business, that got that grocery store, what do you think the next thing they ought to do?
If it's working, you don't change anything.
Okay.
You should have you should have your plan laid out for maybe the first 5 years in your business proposal or your business plan, and how your money was going to be generated for its profit margin. And if it's a gradual slow climb or peaking towards profit, you don't change anything. If anything, you increase. Yeah, I'm a little bit more aggressive, so I kind of go at stuff hard. You know, if I figure I have a solid plan, we step in it, and then once we see it moving, we put a little bit more fire behind it and push it.
Okay.
If you say you made a profit or didn't make a profit, either way, you still got to keep going. Because you have your name, your brand, your reputation out there. But if it doesn't make money, it don't make sense. So if you feel that it's not worth to go through the same thing again next year, because if you're dealing with human beings, it's hard to say how we're going to react day to day. It's hard to say, well, I can get somebody to come in the grocery store and buy milk, fruit. It's hard to say. We can't guarantee that if we build it, they'll come, or if we provide a service or product that they will buy into it. The only thing that we can do is that we can make sure that we put 110 into the business plan, the business model, to make sure that this is something I know that will work, and then we go behind it. Believe in your stuff. If you believe in your product, it's going to do good.
All right. I think you're absolutely correct about that, and I want to make sure that our listening audience understand that because I've ran into brothers who, the first few weeks or the first little upheaval that happened, oh, man, bump this, I'm going to close this thing down, man. I ain't making no money here, man. I ain't feeling it, man. And the next thing you know, they're gone. I think stick-to-itiveness is a vital part in your business, but you feel better if you, like you say, create your plan and formulate your plan, look at all the indications and project into the future what you're going to do. And I was always taught to not even look for a profit in the first year of business, but go ahead and try to make a profit as best you can. But stay there and continue. I think another thing that I have seen brothers and sisters do is they'll open a business this year, and they'll start having money in and haven't really realized a substantial profit. And then they'll go down the street on another side of town and open up another business. I've seen brothers do that and fail. And it seems to me to be some type of violation of business practice. I think you should become well established before you go into the process of duplication. And you follow the same principles that made you successful in the first business, and you duplicate that in opening up your second business in the proper time frame.
Your first business should basically take care of everything. That's what's going to tell you whether or not you got enough money to move forward to any other type of venture, unless you're just a serious risk taker in your product.
Okay. So you're saying that you should use the proceeds from the first business to open up the second business.
Yeah, well, not necessarily using all the proceeds, but, you look at your numbers, and you say, this laptop store is doing good. And now we have enough money that if we open up another one, or we can use the funding to basically get a loan or a small business loan to open up the other one, because we know the numbers are going to be correct. That's what you're looking at. It's all the numbers game, and the numbers don't lie.
Okay. All right. Well, let me ask you this. In your opinion, what are some of the major causes why people were called classified as black, business failures? What are some of the major causes of business failures among these people?
There's several, brother. Some of them, I know some businesses, brothers didn't have enough money to keep their lights on. So when clients came in, these cats had no lights, or not their lights, but their phone bill was off. Their phone, and this is, you know, you're in the high rise, you don't have a phone, and the heat off. You know, people are like, oh, I don't know if I want to leave my business in the hand of this type of person. We have to remain consistent and professional. Your plan has to be solid. You can't take shortcuts. You take shortcuts, that people want. People see that in the business. And then sometimes stuff just happens, man. Sometimes, you know, you have a great idea, plan, product, service, and nobody buys it. You are in this country, or this continent is full of, this is a free market area. So, you know, and you don't have to just deal with North America. You got the whole planet. It has six other continents you can be dealing with. So we can think international, outside of North America. And, you know, sometimes they get emotionally behind their failures. I'll just pull them down.
Well, I have to agree with all of those.
Are you outside, Doc?
No, I'm not outside.
Is there like a fan or something blowing?
No, I don't. But I do hear the background noise.
Maybe that's one of your calls need to mute out.
Okay, I wouldn't hear the muting him out. Okay, I found it. Now, you are right about that, about those causes of failure businesses, and I'm in agreement with that. I think a lot of times we fail too because we just simply don't formulate a solid enough plan. We don't look at the community, and we don't take the time to invest in other people. There is a business building in a certain location, and down the street from me, and I have seen people come in there, open up that business, just to turn around in less than a year to close the doors on it. And so I think that each new person is probably making similar mistakes in regard to that that business in that geographical location. So notice that it's situated where parking is pretty much zero, and but yet they are coming in and opening up the business, and then the things that they are offering may also contribute to the closing of the business. There's a new tenant in the business now, and they have a whole different setup there, but I'm watching it now to see how they're fair. They've been there approximately over a year now. And to me, that is a record, because the rest of them I've seen go in and fail. So I watch different businesses and stuff, and I watch them open and close, open and close, and open and close. And so I learned a lot of things about businesses and stuff. And one of the major things is the geographical location of a business. We have a new caller in. I'm going to open up the line and see if you got any questions and in a few minutes. But we've discussed the trust, and we've discussed how to go about and all the factors, the major factors in opening up a business, and how to be successful at one, and what to look out for, and some of the major causes of the business failure. Among people of African descent, of people who call Negro blacks and colors. Let me click on this brother here. Area code 347. Could you tell us your name and where you're calling from? Area code 347. You're on the air.
I still want to be on the air, brother. I just want to listen.
Hey, my brother. Okay. What's your name, brother? Okay. All right. Anyway, Brother Secure, I see that we have another brother that's, what it says, 3114 area code. And he's on as well. Let me Area code 314, could you tell us your name and where you're calling from?
Hey, I'm calling from the Midwest, Brother Pianchi. What was kind of business was that you observed? What kind of business was they doing? You
okay.
Observed,
well,
they was out of business
in
a year.
This was a little small building down the street from my house, which was once a small Dairy Queen building. And the building sits strategically on the corner, and it has a small corner space. And there's heavy traffic coming in front of the business and on the side of the business, but there's one little small side street, but there's absolutely zero parking. And it's strategically located where customer access is pretty much limited. And
what type of activity were they doing?
Well, various activity. Some of them open up with a hamburger and hot dogs there. They tried barbecue there. They tried a convenience store operation, and they would open and close over and over again in that location.
Well, you know the statistics for black businesses. The latest one that was produced by the U.S. Census survey of U.S. businesses showed that 87% of black businesses gross less than $50,000 a year.
Okay.
And that's about 1.9 million businesses.
Mm-hmm.
And blacks buying wholesale to sell in retail is not the ideal situation to try to survive in. Matter of fact, I think it just ain't going to work. But if it was, it would have by now.
Okay, in your opinion, brother, what would you think would be a better thing for us to invest in?
Well, you need blacks that have skills that's already running somebody else's business, especially along the lines of manufacturing production. And you couldn't do it here in the United States. You'd have to go to some place like West Africa where the labor is conducive.
Okay.
And you can take advantage.
Okay. Brother Diallo, are you in agreement with that?
Absolutely. We don't manufacture anything. Dr. Clark said, man, we don't even make a shoestring. So at some point, we have to get on a position of manufacturing and distribution. To me, those are key in having a power position. Manufacturing something like Gaddafi did, the only African country that manufactured a car, and have distribution. There's nothing without controlling distribution. You just have a great product, but if you can't place your product or get the product to be placed, you have nothing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Population of our own product. Go ahead, brother.
You're gonna have to do it. You're gonna have to do it in a West African country where you have more perks going for you, like free land, and taking advantage of being able to import back into the United States free of tariffs and free of tariffs and levies.
Okay.
You're not going to be able to buy from Asians wholesale because Asians are not going to give you family prices. And matter of fact, I don't blame them.
Okay.
I would just
let me ask you this.
Yeah.
We're all right here now. So, in your opinion, what is it that we can do in our current position as already being in the United States as far as business is concerned that we can do to change the numbers that you had mentioned earlier?
I don't think you're going to do along those lines, because when you leave out of wherever you are tonight, you're going to go buy gas. Somebody from 12 time zones away is selling you that gas.
Mm-hmm.
And more likely when you go buy food, the same scenario is going on. Those two are some of your largest expenditures.
Okay.
We have to one thing we have to do is tap into people, man. For example, that would already have, like he mentioned about, have the skills, because a lot of these cats don't have skills.
They
don't have skills in anything. They can't build anything. They can't fix anything. But we have to have or tap into those relationships with our international brothers and sisters out there, as far as like even the gas aspect or the distribution or the wholesaling of the products to fill up your grocery store. Those relationships that people need, and it can be done as a co-op. It's a successful business, just, you know, getting the people together, man, that want to do something like that.
Okay. Agriculture is very lucrative, especially along the lines of sugar, rice, maize, or corn. Very, very lucrative, but there's no blacks doing none of that in a very large. I don't know any black rice farmers whatsoever. Matter of fact, I was looking for some because I had somebody who wanted 12,500 metric tons of rice.
Okay.
Well, so if I'm going to do anything, I'm going to have to go to a white mill in order to get that.
Okay, well, what about...
Let me ask something. Are you brokering that deal?
Pardon me?
Are you brokering that deal for the rice?
If we can find somebody that has that quantity of rice...
Make sure you give me a call. We'll put that deal together.
But not only that, China is looking for rice. China just had a delegation here in the United States, in the states of Arkansas, California, and I think maybe Florida. I'm in Missouri, maybe southern Missouri. Arkansas is the largest rice producer in the nation. But that's what I, my observation, until we start manufacturing, producing, and blacks in these metro, in these large metropolitan areas like your Atlanta and your Jackson, they should be controlling the consumption habits that they do in those areas. And see, supporting black businesses is not going into a black business, just buying what they're selling. If you selling hamburgers, then now if you're selling whatever, fried eggs, well, blacks should be raising the chickens. They should be transporting the chickens. They should be warehousing, processing all along the way. That's supporting black business. Even if somebody opened up down the street from you, they still got to buy a chicken. And until you start doing it like that,
well, brothers, I'm going to have to...
Let me mention this one more thing, if you don't mind, sir. I was at an event...
Hold on one second. We only have 4 minutes, so you all... You all
real
go
quick.
Ahead.
I was at an event where it was about 250 Asians.
Mm-hmm.
And not one of them had less than $250,000 in liquid assets.
Okay.
Not one of them. Just to go to show you how well they're doing here. Asians earn more than household than even whites do. And,
okay,
of course, we laugh.
How do you think that happened? How do you think they were able to do that?
Because they study what it is that they're getting into. They study people's habits, especially our habits, which is easy to study. But everything that we're buying it from somebody else, and they're there to take it.
Okay. All right, brother.
All right, I'll listen.
That's the end of our broadcast, and you can get with Brother Sakur, and y'all can exchange numbers. And this is going to end our broadcast until tomorrow night. We got Brother Charles Marcus coming in, and he's going to talk about nutrition and health and stuff. And until... next week, I've been your host, Tahaka Mana El Bay, and you've been listening to Morris Talk Lab 100. And good night.
Hey, I'm alone with some money.
Hello?
But I can always feel her presence.
Hello?
I don't care how far I go away.
got a letter today, and it made me feel so good when I read what the letter had to say. I'm gonna take the tension off you, baby, cause I'm on my way.
Hey, baby,
honey, I'm on my way. It ain't gonna take long. And remember that I'm your girl. And when we make love tonight, we won't be dreaming. Girl, we'll be together. We're gonna make love all night until the morning light. We can do no wrong, baby, because I'm home tonight. Let your man is home. Oh, girl, your man is home tonight.
You're so satisfying, and everything.